This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
What if your healthcare costs were guided by community and care rather than corporate profit? That's the power of health sharing, a nonprofit approach that prioritizes you and your lifestyle. Netwell is community-based and built on compassion and affordability, with members supporting each other's needs. Members share lower expenses and more control over their healthcare. If you're looking for a better way to manage healthcare, it's time to explore health sharing. Learn more at netwell.com.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. When you visit the doctor, you probably hand over your insurance, your ID, and contact details. It's just one of the many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose it, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have a lot on our docket today. This hour, we're going to be joined by Rich Lowry. Brett Baer is standing by. Two sensational interviews last night. He had RFK Jr. and he had the ambassador to Israel, because there's a lot of breaking news as looks at the peace process might be derailed, but less terrorists are in this world, and I think that's a good thing. So before we get started, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We can reduce that jail population. Some of this also just has to look at the average stay on Rikers in the 90s was 50 days. Now it's more than 100.
New York mayor's race. Mamdani widens lead with almost 50% of the vote. Why this race has to be converted to a one-on-one for Cuomo or Adams to have any chance of winning, or Sliwa.
Number two.
Elon Musk, Charlie Kirk, other Trump-aligned figures succeeded in making this senseless death a symbol of big city crimes. I have to say, some of the replies to Musk, some of the comments around this story are baldly racist, stoking fear of African Americans because this man attacked a white woman.
Brian Stelter should be unemployable, but for some reason CNN hired him back. What an idiot. Murdered in cold blood in Charlotte in full view, caught on video, and you think it's politics? What the Dems don't understand about crime in America, and CNN still has yet to learn.
Number one.
Israel has nothing to apologize for. Hamas has been giving every opportunity to lay down their weapons and leave and have sanctuary. They choose to fight. I don't blame Israel one bit.
Either do I. That is Senator Lindsey Graham. Crisis in Doha. IDF kills Hamas terror chiefs in Qatar, causing additional international outrage and catching us, the U.S., by surprise. Will anyone bring up the 7 killed waiting for a bus in Israel hours before? We talk about the fallout and where it leaves the peace talks, because as the president's really of two minds. He wanted a heads up. He wanted the peace talks to move forward. But like all of them, they were going to fall short. Brett Baer joins us now, chief political anchor of Fox News, special report, of course. His new book is coming out shortly over in October. It's called To Rescue the American Spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the Birth of a Superpower. Brett, you're all over this. When this happened in the afternoon in Qatar, condemnation. They called it cowardly act over in Qatar. Is this that big of a deal compared to everything we've seen over the last 700 days at war?
Well, it's a big deal. Anytime, you know, Israel ventures into another, you know, sovereign country to go after people, and obviously Hamas is a terrorist group, and they're being harbored by Qatar, and nobody's pressuring Qatar to release them or to pressure them even further than they have. They were in the middle of these negotiations, and they weren't going well, but you know, that's why you saw the Gulf states react how they reacted. The Israeli ambassador to the U.S., as you mentioned, I had on the show, he pushed back hard, saying, you know, we're going to take out Hamas leadership
We have it. Great interview. Yep. Here's an example. Cut three.
You know, this has been going on for months and months and months. And in the meantime, our hostages are being starved in the tunnels of Hamas in Gaza. They can end this now, this moment. They can lay down their weapons like Arafat did in Lebanon in 1982 and leave. and this can be over. We want this war to be over. We want to implement a ceasefire in which everybody will benefit. But we're not going to live with jihadis on our border anymore. That's over. These people are murderous thugs.
And I always had a chance to talk to the Qatari foreign minister spokesman, but Qatar made it clear where they stood. They call Israel a state sponsor of terrorism and a rogue nation. Really? That's rich. Called Bibi Netanyahu a bully and narcissistic. Called the act reckless, a criminal attack on Qatari's sovereignty. And I love the analogy you brought up. Where was bin Laden? In Pakistan. That's a sovereign country, but he's a terrorist and he's killed Americans.
Yeah. And obviously we went in there because we felt it was necessary. We weren't in the process of negotiating with Al-Qaeda at the time. And so, listen, it's complex. And I think that the fallout is going to be significant. I think it probably ends this peace effort in the short term. And this operation in Gaza City is going to expand. And, you know, it's going to be ugly. But the main part was that I don't think Israel got its targets and ended up killing, you know, I don't know what the number is going to be of Qataris who were harboring.
I think six
Hamas.
Or seven, right?
Yeah.
So I was able to speak to Dr. Masheed Al-Sanari. Here's a little of our exchange this morning. Cut seven.
Obviously, Prime Minister Netanyahu does not want peace, does not want the U.S. to create peace in the region, and wants to create more chaos in the region and beyond.
You really think the offer of Hamas being able to leave, the releasing the hostages, is not something the prime minister wants?
Yes. And this is why he attacked every time there was a peace that was going to come across the corner. We've seen this happen at every interval of these talks. Wherever we get close to a deal, there is sabotage by Prime Minister Netanyahu.
There's no way, and at the end of this, you could listen to it. There's no way they're honest brokers. For him to act like a mediator and make that statement, it's the Israelis that don't want peace. When you take 200-plus hostages and you won't release 20 that are still alive or 48 total with the bodies, and it's the prime minister that doesn't want peace, here's more. Cut six.
If you think that the relation between the bombing at the bus station hours before, which was had to be green-lighted or at least okayed, certainly not condemned by those people taking part in the negotiations, how do you expect Israel to take that?
How do you expect Qatar to take an attack on its sovereignty at a time when the meetings were in place under the supervision of the United States and Trump administration with Envoy Witkoff engaged fully with our prime minister to make sure that the ideas that were presented by President Trump were put on the table. At that time, the meeting itself, according to the Israelis, was the target of the attack. How does that make us feel about the partnership with the United States over dealing with this issue?
So if the bus bombing doesn't happen, that attack doesn't happen. That was a response, and that's where they were located. Your thoughts?
Yeah, listen, Israel is going to do what Israel is going to do. I asked, the knowledge, the communication with President Trump, the Israeli ambassador wouldn't go into that. Obviously, the White House has said they were told very close to the bombing. I think Israel is suggesting it was a little bit more detailed of that discussion. I think the fallout is that it was not moving forward and it was going nowhere. And if you I talked to Steve Witkoff, a week and a half ago on the show, and I said, who is to blame for the fact that this is not moving forward? And he said, Hamas, 100%. In this negotiation, one way is Hamas not saying yes. It's been offered like three times, three different ways, in different proposals. So listen, this is a big deal, a really big deal, but now it's almost been superseded by Russian drones going across into Poland. That's obviously a NATO country. They were shot down. And I'm going to have the Polish foreign minister on the show tonight.
Great.
It's a big, big deal. And it's an expansion. Meanwhile, that hope of Zelensky and Putin sitting down one-on-one is essentially out the window. I think the president knows that.
And Brett, I think they've been more aggressive since Alaska, and they've been five times as aggressive since China. Their meeting in China, did Putin went over to China. And since that time, 216 drones were fired into Ukraine, 45 missiles over the last 48 hours, the most over the last 2 days. Poland shoots down Russian drones who breached their airspace, at least 10 of them. And there wasn't one of those things where the Russians say, you know, a drone landed in our, you know, in Poland and we apologize. They have not done anything. In fact, people are led to believe that they were targeting Poland. And it wasn't for the Dutch F-30. It looks like the Dutch F-35 fighters got involved to help out. Now there's going to be an emergency meeting. I mean, and I know their European leader is going to meet with the president anyway this week. Have you gotten the sense that the administration understands that this thing might be intractable?
Starting to. I think it's been a slow, there's been a wish casting about maybe this is going to, you know, this is a final push or something, but it has not stopped. And it, you know, for all the talk about let's get this on track and I'm going to push extra sanctions to make sure that Putin gets back to the table, that trigger has not been pulled. So the dynamic has to change, and I think they're getting to a realization that it's emergent.
I almost feel like Vladimir Putin say, I dare you, do something. You know, it's not even a nuance where you could say, well, what do they really mean by that? And there's indications they wanted to. No, they're saying, no, I'm not going to meet with Zelensky. He wants to come to Moscow. Yeah, okay, fine. I'm not slowing down. I'm picking up the pace. And they have plans to build more drones, more rockets, build their arsenal up through 2027. The plans are on the table. They're going to be a military economy.
Yeah, and they're not changing. And the fact that these drones were across the border and it wasn't just one or two, it was like a number of them, and they were shot down. The Ukrainian Air Force, obviously they have a vested interest in telling a story that they were a threat to a neighboring country, but I think that they have a case to be made that there was a threat to a neighboring country that happens to be a NATO country. And if a NATO country is attacked under Article 5, all of the NATO countries are to step in and support it. So this is a brink moment with Russia. And for all of the stuff about Doha and Hamas and where that stands, I think it actually is trumped by what's happening today with this.
Here's our NATO General Secretary Mark Rutte.
To Putin, I mean, my message is clear. Stop the war in Ukraine. Stop the escalating war, which he is now basically mounting on innocent civilians and civilian infrastructure. Stop violating Allied airspace and know that we stand ready, that we are vigilant, and that we will defend every inch of NATO territory.
Let's see. They're also threatening Finland and making maneuvers to infiltrate the Moldova elections. So anybody who thinks that they want to reconstitute the Soviet Union and that it is all about NATO being too aggressive, number one, it's a dumb argument. It's a lazy argument. And there's absolutely zero evidence of it.
Yeah, it's cut and dry, I think. And I think today is really a tipping point in the narrative. You know, the president's dealing, obviously, with a lot of different things all at once, and that is the presidency, always. But these are big, big, big issues.
So, Brett, what was your impression of RFK coming out of the Oval Office yesterday? You caught up with him at the White House. He's been under fire lately. He's been giving it back. I get it. I know about the executive order saying easy on the ads when it comes to pharmaceuticals. But do you get the sense this is a crisis moment with Maha?
I think it's a tough moment. I think they're getting a lot of challenge from Capitol Hill. I think that the vaccine stuff and how the CDC, you know, obviously the secretary hired the CDC director and then fired her. And then her op-ed about, you know, why she believed she was fired because she was standing up for the use of vaccines. And I think there's real concern, not just from Democrats, but Republicans like Senator Barrasso and Senator Cassidy up on Capitol Hill. So, you know, I asked Secretary K. Kennedy about that and read him a piece of that op-ed from the CDC director who had been fired. He said basically what he had said on Capitol Hill is that something has to change as far as how the agency works, and that nobody's going to be prevented from getting a vaccine if they want it. I think there are questions, you know, about insurance and who's paying for it and is there accessibility, et cetera, et cetera. Right. And those are all things that you're going to face up on Capitol Hill again for Secretary Kennedy.
And just Trump, I think last week said polio vaccines work really well, measles, mumps. You know, there's some vaccines that are working well, that they do work. So I think that there's a sense among Republicans that you can't be too radical when it comes to things fundamental to American health. And there's things that got to be changed and you could have at it. And I think perhaps that's what I think they got to work on with messaging. And maybe they went over that with the executive order today. Your final thought?
Yeah. Listen, for a rare event, that executive order was a closed press event. And you know, there's probably a number of reasons why that was. I mean, the breaking Doha situation, the, you know, all of the focus at the press briefing about Epstein. But also because I think Secretary Kennedy had faced a lot of criticism from Capitol Hill, and you know, they wanted to be controlled in the Oval Office instead of a melee of taking questions. But obviously, I asked the questions outside the West Wing, and we were happy to have him come on.
Oh, that's great. And we look forward to your show tonight. The Polish, you said Prime Minister?
Foreign Minister.
Foreign Minister, great. Brett Baer, tonight at 6 o'clock Eastern Time. Don't forget to pick up his book, pre-order it, To Rescue the American Spirit. Brett, great job. Thank you.
See you.
1-866-408-7669. Some calls next. A lot on the docket. Rich Lowry put this all in perspective with he's the editor of National Review. Big hour.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
America is built on hard work and powered by American energy. Chevron has spent $44 billion with local businesses across all 50 states since 2022, fueling infrastructure and communities, all while strengthening local economies. Last year, Chevron increased U.S. production nearly 20%, powering communities and businesses from the heartlands to the coast. We're helping to fuel America's energy advantage, building a brighter future right here at home. Visit chevron.com/America to discover more.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Most murders in the U.S. never become national news. Elon Musk, Charlie Kirk, other Trump-aligned figures succeeded in making this senseless death a symbol of big city crime. It's being used, as you said, Brianna, as a political symbol, with MAGA media calling for more forceful punishments and more incarceration. I have to say, some of the replies to Musk, some of the comments around this story are baldly racist, stoking fear of African Americans because this man attacked a white woman. The open racism on sites like X today, it's eye-popping.
Here we go. That is just absolutely insane. But what do you expect from Brian Stelter and CNN? You have a person murdered on a train. She's a working-class woman, like most people in mass transit, coming back after working two jobs and gets hacked to death by a career criminal who should have been locked up, according to his mother. And that's why it represents everything that's wrong in all these cities. But it's not for political gain. It's to highlight how dangerous this is and how preventable these crimes are. And that's why the mayor comes out, Stelter says something as stupid as that, as if this is something that Republicans want to get votes on. No, this is why they want to point out the difference between the two. You like illegal immigrants. Well, I don't like the rapists, child molesters, and others, and the millions that have been asked to leave. Probably they have criminal records. Number two is 70% of those who have been arrested and been deported or on deck circle to be deported have criminal records. All this stuff and the crimes that happen is preventable. There are going to be car accidents. There's going to be murders. There's going to be victims of rage. You can't do anything about bad behavior. But the one that's criminal behavior, and it's incessant, and it's consistent, and that you allow it to happen, allow these victims to be victimized, there are things we can do. And that's the point. Governor Pritzker and others, they don't want to do anything. These progressive DAs don't want to do anything, and these prosecutors aren't interested. That's not okay anymore. And if you're going to point that out and say it's politics, no, it's called common sense. Not conservative, common sense. Hi, everyone. It's Brian Kilmeade here. Are you tired of those uncomfortable dress shirts, especially when they bunch up under a sweater? If so, then you must check out Collars & Co., makers of the Dress Collar Polo. Listen up. These shirts are four-way stretch, buttery soft polos with firm dress collars on them, so they give you the dress shirt look, but extremely comfortable polo feel. You can wear them with anything, under a sweater, with a blazer, or by themselves as an elevated polo. They work for any occasion. These polos are perfect, whether it's in the office, on a golf course, or a night out. Collars & Co. is exploding and have gone viral on social media thanks to the $1 million investment they received on Shark Tank from Mark Cuban and Peter Jones. You don't have to worry about collars that flop down and spread out. They stay firm and sharp all day. It's an amazing array of sweaters, quarter zips, pants, and outerwear. If you're looking for the performance dress shirt or polo that looks great all day, check out collarsandco.com. Use promo code Brian for 15% off of any purchase of $100 or more. That's promo code Brian.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I want to be clear that, like, law enforcement isn't to prevent crime. Law enforcement solves crime, okay? That is what they are supposed to do. They are supposed to solve crimes, not necessarily prevent them from happening, per se.
That was one of the stupidest things you could ever say. And this is a lawyer who said it, Jasmine Crockett. It's not a police officer's job to prevent crime, just to investigate it. Rich Lowry, I imagine as editor of National Review, you would, as an editor, if someone gave you a column with that sentence in it, you would adjust that sentence, wouldn't you?
I spike the column and I fire the writer.
Absolutely.
It's so incredibly stupid. Come on. You had them patrolling the streets because you're hoping crime doesn't happen in the first place. Once the crimes happen, one, that by definition is a failure, and it can be very hard to track down the perpetrators, right? In Chicago, I was looking at this a week or two, Brian, we've all focused on the Chicago situation. I think 1 in 7 felonies result in an arrest, right? Even if it's 6 out of 7, you'd say that's not enough. But 1 out of 7? So it's completely wrongheaded. But this is the insanity that a huge swath of the Democratic Party is beholden to on crime issues.
I know. And to see the headlines over recently and the very little coverage on national news on this horrific crime that happened on that train, and to say that it's being used, it's being used for Republicans, maybe conservatives, in order to make some noise, is just insane. On the AP on Monday, Charlotte leaders criticized over killing of Ukrainian woman as Trump and MAGA targeted another Dem city. What? Axios, stabbing video fuels MAGA's crime message. Politico, same thing. New York Times, same thing. So they're talking about this is fueling the message rather than what happened with the murder and the 14 arrests and the 6 years in prison and the mom saying he's a danger and the brother saying he never should have been on the street. All that doesn't figure into the headline. You do this for a living. Think about that.
Yeah, and the idea that we're not going to focus on local crime stories that might have carry lessons about how our system works after the last 12 or 15 years of George Floyd and Michael Brown and every police-involved shooting involving an African-American potentially becoming a national story. And, you know, very often false narratives, sometimes true, sometimes genuine outrages, and they've actually driven changes. You know, we have body cam footage on cops now largely because of the attention of these local stories. So please don't come to me and say we shouldn't focus on this because it was local. I mean, what kind of crimes are national? Like, they all have to happen in a specific place, and this one has resonance telling us, you know, we're much, much too loose on repeat offenders. And I think this is a really key thing. We need to do more to mandate the treatment and, failing that, the institutionalization of crazy people. You know, this guy, the rap he was up on before he committed this murder was not a rap you're going to send away someone to prison for a long time. It was abusing a 911 system by making a crazy call. But it is something that you conclude this guy is out of his mind, as his mom knows, as his family knows, as every cop who's interacted with him knows. So we're going to force him to get help and not just let him wander the street, living a life of squalor, making the public spaces disorderly, and perhaps committing some heinous, blood-curdling crime.
Look, Elon Musk is the one that spotted it. He brought it out. Charlie Kirk talked about it. We got a hold of it, and then we realized this video. And, guys, I have to tell you, you might want to think twice, but if you do want to find out what happened, this guy stands up, slices her neck, with this woman's neck from behind, 23-year-old, just fresh off work, and she's shocked. She looks up frightened and then gradually loses consciousness, falls onto the floor, and everyone just sits there. Evidently, there are people that tried to revive her, but it was too late. They didn't touch this guy. And now compare it to Danny Penny. Danny Penny sees the same type of danger for others, not to him. And he gets Jordan Neely in a submission hold, and the guy was on drugs, and he died. And Danny Penny gets the lead on every single newscast. For about two years, he was in
local
the news.
Local story.
Right?
Local story,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, local story. Why make it a big deal of it?
Yeah. So, look, they needed a Daniel Penny on that light rail car. Now, of course, he wouldn't have been able to do anything because there was no warning. But if that guy had stood up and said, I'm going to kill someone, you would have wanted a Daniel Penny to subdue him. Instead, you know, maybe they're legitimately out of it, but I think there was some willful obtuseness. People just didn't want to deal with the situation on that train. And it is shocking. You know, you just want to get from one place to another to get home after work. And to witness a gruesome murder is something all of us would have trouble processing. But that's why a Daniel Penny is even more admirable, because he does something that's out of the ordinary, that's a public service, puts his neck on the line, literally, you know, physically on that train, and then afterwards legally, and he was supposed to be the villain. So it's not just the state is not doing enough to protect us. It's actually, in some cases, trying to nail the people who go out of their way to protect others.
Yeah, and now we're going to see a showdown possibly in Chicago or possibly in Boston or New York, or the president saying, I'm thinking about putting my security team into New Orleans and do what they did in D.C. I don't know if you're in D.C. now, but Rich, who are your friends or you? What have you noticed since the president moved in 30 days ago?
Yeah, so I don't live in D.C. Or around it. But one, everyone I talked to just when this was happening said the numbers are BS. Or even if they're not BS, it's not how anyone feels. Everyone at least knows someone who'd been assailed or the victim of a crime. Everyone had been in Union Station and realized what squalor it was. We have a young woman reporter down there who just stepped in human feces in Union Station. This what should be a beautiful, gleaming, you know, highlight of D.C. So I think clearly the public presence of the National Guard has helped. You know, they're not making arrests themselves, but it kind of has a deterrent effect and sends a message. And then I think that the stuff that's probably really making a difference is what we don't see, you know, on the B-roll on cable TV, which is DEA agents and ATF agents and others going into neighborhoods and arresting dangerous people. Because the pattern in D.C., the same as a lot of urban areas, you get a very small contingent of young men, have rap sheets, gang affiliated, who drive 60 or 70% of the gun crime. I think 500 individuals is the estimate. So, you know, you reduce that population, you get them behind bars, then you really may be looking at a safer city going forward, which would be wonderful.
So I want you, I don't know if you know how formal this is. They did an investigation. They find out the people that put these liberal prosecutors, these criminal first prosecutors and DAs in place, it's called the Wren Collective. They've been able to generate millions of dollars, including from a Texas billionaire named John Arnold. He put in $40 million to try to get all these lenient, easy on crime, get out of prisons, close prisons, people in place. And it's cost thousands of lives. And it's changed the texture of almost every major city. This pushback in Los Angeles, they threw out Chesa Boudin. I think there's pressure in other places. But this is a concerted effort to allow these criminals to run wild. What should be the counter narrative on that?
Well, one, we have seen some backlash, because even in places like San Francisco, you can push people too far. Two, we need a similar effort on the right, you know. And there was a event, I think it was at Mar-a-Lago during the transition, where someone said was giving a speech and said, "Who's going to be our George Soros?" And Musk raised his hand. But we need someone to counter this effort on criminal justice, and we should have more success, because our position is actually popular and makes sense. But it doesn't matter if you have out of their minds DAs in place in these various jurisdictions.
Here's what James Barnicle said, the FBI special agent in charge, cut 22. This is in Charlotte.
The system has failed us in this case. There is no doubt. Everyone deserves to go about their daily lives, to get to work, to get to school, just across town without the fear of being attacked. We should live in a country and in a city where accountability, if you're convicted for a violent crime, is always paramount.
And it sounds like you're talking to a law school class 101. That's our goal, but that's what we're living through. These are self-inflicted wounds, pun intended. Lastly, last night, and you have a real sense of Cold War and writing about it and seeing the Soviet Union become Russia with the drunk Yeltsin leading it for a while and Putin taking over. And at first we thought we can deal with him, but it comes to clearer every day he has no interest. From Alaska to the visit in China, he has only ramped up and amped up the attacks on Ukraine, and now he hits Poland, and they knock six drones out of the sky. Put in perspective how big a deal this is.
Well, it's dangerous, and it's one reason you want the war to end. And as we talked about many, many times before, it's not going to end unless Russia's convinced it's not going to win, and it becomes very painful for it to continue. So I think we need to do more sanctions. We need the secondary sanctions. We need to back Ukraine to the hilt, because, you know, when a NATO country becomes involved, that's really frightening. And this is a bad situation. It should be obvious to everyone who the malefactor is and who the instigator is. And I think President Trump is increasingly aware
of
that.
Rich, what do you hope? What do you hope you hear from the president this week on this?
You talk to people who talk to him privately, and he's not a fan of Putin. Now, I can say criticisms of Zelensky, too. But he's not a fan of Putin. I just hope we hear it publicly. And I think he's got to do stuff now. You know, I think he got him to Alaska because Putin thought actually, you know, that they were really coming, the secondary sanctions. But he's got to do it because I don't think that the threats are going to have any effect on Putin.
Well, aren't the India ones are in effect, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I was a little confused at what happened after Alaska. I believe so. But you need more, and you need to be just clear. You're in it for the long haul, and you're going to back Ukraine to the hilt. You want a deal, you know, and when Putin's really ready, you're eager to do it. Mm-hmm. But until that time comes, we're going to make sure that he doesn't win this war.
Well, Rich, you have a lot to write about as editor of National Review. Go get him, Rich. Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
When we come back, Kamala Harris has got a book coming out, and I thought it was going to be real boring, and it probably is. I see some excerpts in The Atlantic are worth going over. You're going to want to hear this. Don't move.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by KPMG. Making an impact is how KPMG helps make the difference. KPMG applies advanced tools and strategic thinking to convert data into actionable knowledge and deliver value by improving performance through transformation, modernizing processes with technology, harnessing the power of data, navigating complex M&A transactions, and enhancing trust among stakeholders. Go to kpmg.us/advisory to learn more. KPMG, make the difference.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You can find his many books at America's favorite landfills. Host of Fox and Friends at One Nation, Brian Kilmeade.
This story must bother you on a number of levels. Number one, Brian Stelter has your name, Brian. And he probably makes more money than you.
True.
Yeah, he probably, you know, goes to better parties than you. But at least you still have hair.
Right. Is that the question? But there's two things that stand out with me, and this is going to, you're going to say at the end of the show, that B block, Brian, you were remarkable.
Okay. Wow.
What do you think?
No. There was nothing remarkable about that. I mean, seriously, I got nothing
so
out of
it. You're disappointed.
Dude. I'm remarkably disappointed. So thank you for that.
You cut it off a little bit early. I also saw that she told the Italians don't spend it all on spaghetti, told the Germans it's not all about knockwurst, and told the Swedes don't blow it on a futon in IKEA. Thank you.
Nice. You know,
thank you.
We have to applaud his effort.
Okay? A for effort.
Yes.
Not remarkable.
You get the most spirited trophy.
But when he started, he had 11 million listeners. He's down to 125,000.
Wow.
125,000. I mean, that's the story.
You have and he's more getting than that, don't you?
I better.
Yeah.
Except for when I come on this show.
Yo.
Shots fired.
It's a fun show last night.
You guys were having fun going
right.
back and
it
forth.
Was, yeah, it was fun. And no, like, the whole thing was fun. It was just, and I couldn't believe it. The first block was murder. And I thought to myself, is this Gutfeld? And he says, no, we're just going to take from the media angle. And he briefed it. He never does this. He just does his show, says hello. But he says, guys, first off, in the A block, let's not focus on the murder. Let's focus on the media once again gets it totally wrong, which, by the way, is the same message. I mean, you literally look at this and you hear it. You read what the mayor says. The mayor says, you can't arrest your way out of a lunatic who wants to randomly kill somebody. Yes, you can. That person is a 14-time criminal, been convicted, and was told by his family, don't let him out. He's dangerous. By his mom. If your mom says your son is dangerous and throws him out of your house, but a judge says, go wild, I have a problem with that. That, to me, reeks of preventable. So Kamala Harris wrote a book. I'm not going to buy it, but I saw Atlantic did some excerpts from it. And I'll just share some of them with you. Number one, she makes herself a martyr, in my view. She thinks that she's a sympathetic figure that's been oppressed and that she's somehow trying to get the word out. She blames the Biden administration and their press team for a lot of the problems she had. She says they enhanced any negative publicity against her. They thought if she does well, that Joe Biden had to do bad. That was fundamentally wrong. Here's an example. She writes this. When Fox News attacked me on everything from my laugh to my tone of voice to whom I dated in my 20s or claimed I was a DEI hire, the White House rarely pushed back in my actual resume with my actual resume. 2 terms elected DA, top cop in the second largest city, senator, senator representing California. I don't know. I talked to Kayleigh McEnany this morning. She said, it's never the president's press team job to defend the vice president. You always refer it back. She says, no one had my back. She said the plan was exaggerated. She evidently was in France. And she put on a French accent, and she said she didn't. But the White House seemed to glad to be reporting about my gaffe and overwhelmed the significant thaw in foreign relations that I achieved when I visited Macron after they sold, after they pulled the subway contract, excuse me, the submarine contract from their country and gave it to Australia. Worse, she writes, I often learned that the president's staff was adding fuel to the negative narratives that sprang up around me. One narrative that took a stubborn hold that was I was chaotic, had a chaotic office, an unusually high staff turnover. Can I just put my words in here? You did, and it was. Here's her explanation. The plan, in fact, is many people who come to work with the new administration in the White House haven't done it before. It's a job unlike any other, and every person, no matter how much talented they are, can step up and do a high-stress, round-the-clock note. Others find they just don't want a job that doesn't pay them particularly well and take a massive toll on the family. So it's not her fault the job's really hard and people couldn't do it. That's her answer. And the DEI thing pops up again. Get this. Working for the first woman vice president, my staff had the additional challenge of confronting gendered stereotypes, a constant battle that could prove exhausting. Oh, my God, you called her a woman again. How dare you? And then the woe is me. The president doesn't have my back. The VP should take irregular migration. That was in March of 2021. My assignment was to attack the root causes of the misery that was driving people from their homes and villages because I'd prosecute cartels and human traffickers in the Northern Triangle. Number one, that's wrong. They told her to handle border security. She punted and said, I'll handle root causes. And she brags about saying that I got people to invest $5.2 billion in their own projects to keep people home. But no one stayed home. MasterCard, Microsoft, and Nespresso, whatever they invested money in, but didn't work. She goes on and talks about her policy dealing with Mexico and Venezuela. Listen, it failed. You said you can't. It's an intractable program. No, it was fixed. And finally, she talks about the election. Should I have told Joe to consider not running? Perhaps. But the American people had chosen him before in the same matchup. Maybe he was right to believe that he would do so again. He was, by some measures, the most consistently underestimated man in Washington. He'd been right about the tactics for pushing his agenda through a resisting Congress. And would have come off as self-serving if I advised him not to run, and naked ambition, perhaps for me, and disloyal if I ran. But, she went on to say, This wasn't a choice that we should have had to make. He let in his individual ego, an individual's ambition, take over. It should have been more than personal decision. That's a shot at Biden, big time.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, one from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. Brian Kilmeade Show moving through, and, you know, all eyes are here for the mayor's race, also crime. You hear about these two seniors that were killed in their 70s, tied to a pole and burned alive. That's in New York City. I mean, what is going on here? It is just insane. Standing by is Eli Lake, columnist for the Free Press, contributing editor at Commentary. Trey Yinks is going to give us an update from Kyiv. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We can reduce that jail population. Some of this also just has to look at the average stay on Rikers in the 90s was 50 days. Now it's more than 100.
And you think that's bad? New York mayor's race. Mamdani widens lead with almost 50% of the vote. Why this race has to be converted to a one-on-one. Cuomo, Adams, Sliwa, somebody or two people got to step aside.
Number two.
Elon Musk, Charlie Kirk, other Trump-aligned figures succeeded in making this senseless death a symbol of big city crimes. I have to say, some of the replies to Musk, some of the comments around this story are baldly racist, stoking fear of African-Americans because this man attacked a white woman.
While saying, I just got that white girl. Unbelievable. That is the ridiculous Brian Stelter, murdered in cold blood in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Dems call it pure politics. What the Dems don't understand about crime in America, we're against it, and why common sense once again is being ignored.
Number one.
Israel has nothing to apologize for. Hamas has been given every opportunity to lay down their weapons and leave and have sanctuary. They choose to fight. I don't blame Israel one bit.
I hear you. That is Senator Lindsey Graham. Crisis in Doha. IDF kills Hamas terror chiefs in Qatar, causing additional international outrage and catching us with the U.S. by surprise. Will anyone bring up the seven killed waiting for a bus in Israel hours before? We talk about the fallout and where it leaves the peace talks. And joining us now is Eli Lake, columnist for the Free Press. Eli, your thoughts about the prime minister's decision to go after Hamas higher-ups in Doha?
I think that it was not as surprising as some would say. We saw the Israeli, the chief of the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, say last week that Hamas leaders are not going to be safe wherever they are in the world. We knew that Israel had this capability because they took out Ismail Haniya in Tehran, or rather in Qom, last year. And it was always a question of, you know, when was this going to happen in terms of Qatar? And it's, I think the real scandal is, why is Qatar hosting Hamas senior leaders? I mean, that's that's the bigger issue. And I know this is going to sound counterintuitive, Brian, but I think Israel may have done, I mean, we don't know. There's some reports now that they may not have gotten some of the leaders that they thought they'd gotten. Okay, but maybe they did Qatar a favor. What is in it for Qatar at this point to play the double game that they've been playing now for 20 years? Iran is a weak power. It's unclear whether that regime will survive past the current nearly 90-year-old Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. There is no longer this ring of fire and network of proxies. Hezbollah is finished in Lebanon. The Houthis just had their leadership taken out. Hamas's leaders are, you know, have been dropping, you know, really since the war started after October 7th. So what, you know, the bet against Israel in the region looks like a bad bet. And Qatar, I mean, I don't think unless they're really ideologically suicidal, I think that their flirtation with the Muslim Brotherhood after every other major Gulf power, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, United Arab Emirates, have pretty much washed their hands of the Muslim Brotherhood. It's time to recalibrate. And Israel just kind of proved that the strategy, the double game, will have consequences in Qatar. So I think it's time for the al-Thani family to reconsider and maybe sort of, you know, join the other Gulf nations and get out of the terrorism and get out of the Islamic supremacy.
They killed at least five members of Hamas and a member of Qatar's internal security force. Among the Hamas members known to be killed were the son of a senior Hamas leader, Dr. Khalil Hawaya, the head of the Hamas movement in Gaza. Listen, there were comments before. I was reading the comments just to get ready for the show yesterday and saying, yeah, what's the latest with these peace talks? Well, let go of everybody, including the 20 living and the 40-plus hostages in exchange for some prisoners and a ceasefire. And you know what the comment from Hamas was? This is capitulation, but we'll look at it anyway. They weren't going to sign off on that. So listen to Dr. Masheed Al-Sanari on with me this morning on Fox and Friends. Here's a little of it. Cut five.
Did you condemn the attacks on the bus station that killed seven innocent people who had the audacity to wait for mass transportation?
I think,
same
Brian,
day
when our country's sovereignty was attacked by a state actor like Israel, our main concern right now is with our own national security, our own sovereignty, and the blatant attack on our sovereignty taken by a state that is a member of the European Union, of the international community.
So he really thinks it's surprising that if you house a terror group that committed the October 7th atrocities, that they might be targeted in his country. Has he been paying attention? Did anyone see what happened in Iran? Did you see they were waiting to go to a funeral for the Iranian president. Did anyone see what happened to the Houthi rebels in their own country?
Hosting a group that is clear goal is to violently destroy the world's only Jewish state is a violation of Israel's sovereignty. What is this guy talking about? After October 7th, the foreign minister and I think the prime minister of Qatar praised the attack, called it an act of resistance, said that the attack was solely on Israel, that's why they were attacked, because of the occupation or some, you know, red-green nonsense theory about that makes the victim of an attack the aggressor. So, I mean, the Qataris have their talking points right now. They maybe need a little bit of time, but it's, you know, this is an opportunity for their leader to say that there really isn't what are the benefits at this point of being, you know, the one Gulf state that is going to continue to support Muslim Brotherhood ideology and continue to host Hamas. Now, Hamas will probably end up going to Turkey. That's going to be much harder for Israel to openly attack because it's a NATO ally. Maybe they'll go to Iran, but the Israelis have proven they can get Hamas leaders there. So, I mean, this is very important that and by the way, the people who are the Hamas leaders who are in Doha living five-star luxury lives are some of the most despicable people on the planet. They plunged Gaza into a horrible war. They're not only responsible for a group that conducts, you know, kidnappings and mass rape and mass killings and all of that. Think about what traitors they are to their own alleged cause of Palestinian dignity. The idea that these people are going to be paying zero consequences for a war that they started against a much more powerful enemy and then designed all of Gaza and built an underground military city so that the civilian infrastructure was in the way of the military that just launched the war, it's despicable. These people, I mean, so what are the Qataris doing? And maybe we could understand it because this is, you know, they'd made their bet a long time ago. What is the government of France doing? What is Macron doing? What is Keir Starmer doing, saying that they're going to denounce this attack? And, you know, I kind of understand that there are a lot of equities going on with Donald Trump and that he did consider the Qataris to be valuable as sort of interlocutors and mediators. I would disagree with that. you know, so we sort of saw this, what I thought was a bit of a garbled message from the White House. You know, on the one hand, he didn't think Qatar should have been attacked. On the other hand, he thinks it's good to kill Hamas. But everybody needs to kind of screw their heads on again on this stuff. Israel's doing the world a favor. They're remaking the Middle East right now, and they're getting, and they're hopefully going to force Qatar to get out of their double game and kind of move forward. I mean, we have an opportunity to take out Iran and its access at this point, and that is a good thing for global stability and peace.
Right. Think about it. Syria. Look at Houthis. Look at Iran. Yeah. Fight in the back. Hezbollah has been destroyed. We see what's going on here. Let him finish the job with the people that started it and stop this incessant problem. So I asked him where this goes from here. Cut seven.
Obviously, Prime Minister Netanyahu does not want peace, does not want the U.S. to create peace in the region, and wants to create more chaos in the region and beyond.
You really think the offer of Hamas being able to leave, the releasing the hostages, is not something the Prime Minister wants?
Yes. And this is why he attacked every time there was a peace that was going to come across the corner. We've seen this happen at every interval of these talks. Wherever we get close to a deal, there is sabotage by Prime Minister Netanyahu.
So right after, I told him, clearly you're not a mediator. Yeah, I mean, clearly you're siding with Hamas through this entire thing. I mean, that was his whole, the Qatari foreign minister spokesperson. It was clear this guy is no arbitrator. It's no referee.
It's outrageous. The notion that the Israelis don't want their hostages back is crazy. Israel has been willing to release people with life sentences who have been convicted of murder and horrendous terrorism in order to get hostages back. They did a hostage deal nearly 20 years ago to get Gilad Shalit, and one of the people they let out was Yahya Sinwar, who is the, you know, who was the field commander who launched the October 7th war. So the idea that the Israelis are not interested in peace, when every single opportunity, and we know this from negotiators from both the Biden and Trump administrations have said that every time they seem to get close, there are a series of kind of deal-killing demands from Hamas. So they're obviously playing out the clock. And what Hamas will never give up the last hostage. They want to kind of torment Israel as much as they can. And they believe that that's the key to their survival. And I think what the strike on – I mean, I know that this is an unpopular position right now in the world. The strike on Qatar could lead to peace in that it might finally convince the leadership of Hamas that has largely, again, faced no consequences for their aggression and terror to finally recognize that there's going to be a cost. This is a kind of what they might call the FAFO doctrine, but I think that that is a valuable lesson at this point, and hopefully a deterrent to other terrorists in the region at this point.
That'll be interesting. Real quick, your take on Russia of sending drones into Poland and Poland knocking them out of the sky, as well as with the aid of the Dutch.
Well, I mean, I think what we're seeing is a kind of new, hopefully spurred in some ways by concerns about the U.S. commitment to NATO. I don't think that those concerns are there as much because Trump is sort of recalibrated, but we're seeing a new European defense cooperation. Hopefully this will lead to a kind of urgency on the part of Europe. There's a lot more that needs to be done. There needs to be follow through, frankly, from Germany and other countries to do what France has done, which is to get off of Russian natural gas and oil and go nuclear. That's very important. And the fact that that hasn't happened yet is an absolute disgrace. But Russia is isolating itself in the moment. And if the Europeans can wake up, really commit spending-wise, to double down on their own defense, then I think everybody will end up as a winner. Sadly, the Ukrainian people are still paying for this fecklessness. But the Ukrainians are proving themselves to be a much tougher foe than anybody thought. I don't think it's inevitable that Russia's going to win, and I don't think Ukrainians are going to ever accept the idea that they will be a vassal state to
Never.
Russia. That's not going to happen. So It's sad that the war continues, but that's not the fault of Ukraine and its allies. It's the fault of Russia.
I want to see the president kick up some serious aggression with the sanctions and weapons and air defense quickly, and send a loud message in a major address. And that's what I would love to see. The president should be given great credit for trying to bring this to a to appeal, but it has not been reciprocated by Russia. Don't blame Ukraine on this.
Well, I would have one more thing. I want to see the president also get serious and announce a Pentagon kind of Manhattan project for building air missile drone defense, because our allies need it, America needs it,
yes,
and we are running out. And that we have to address that. We have to rebuild our own defense industrial sector, which we let that kind of wither on the vine. Now's the time to renew that. That is very consistent with Trump's agenda. That will speak volumes, by the way, if we have a serious plan and we can kind of get not just Ukraine, Israel, our allies, the tools they need to defend themselves from countries like Russia, China, et cetera.
I hear you. Eli Lake, look him up at the Free Press and on Commentary Magazine. Thanks, Eli.
Thank you.
1-866-408-7669. Trey Yinks at the bottom of the hour. Your call's next. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Checks are coming out soon. Watch the mail. Okay? Okay? Don't spend it all one day. Get something you really need. Okay? Don't stop by the liquor store. Okay? Buy something for the kids. Buy them some food. Sometimes I have to stop by the liquor store too. I understand. It's all right. It's all right.
So this condescending clown is the governor of New York, and she's talking about rebate checks that are going to go in the mail, which when you're in a state that's so overdrawn like we are, it's crazy to mail out rebate checks. But, you know, all leaders do it. But she says, okay, you're about to get some money. Don't blow it on the liquor store. What an insult. You're trying to talk about a stereotype that he's talking to a black church, by the way, that all blacks are going to go drink away their $200 checks. I mean, and then, of course, you know, Elise Stefanik, who's also running for the Republican, looks like she's going to run as a Republican against her, was all over this and said, this is the same woman that came out with this. Do you guys remember with the computer system? Do you guys ever work with computers going to this black high school? Have you guys ever worked with computers? Oh, I think we have, Lieutenant Governor or Governor at the time. So I don't know her view on a minorities in America. She might need some education.
Two things. Like Kat said on Gutfeld last night, this is such a great example of if a Republican said this.
Oh.
But then also the fact that she said, make sure you spend it on the kids and buy them food. Are you like that?
That's a good point.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
That was more
offensive. If your kids are starving, don't get Jack Daniels.
Yeah.
That's always it. I think that's a bumper sticker.
Be a responsible parent and feed your child before you get the Jack.
Right. It's easy on the Sambuca. I think your kid wants a sandwich.
Do you think they're really buying Sambuca?
Right. I don't like Sambuca anyway. It's like medicine, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not my favorite.
Yeah. And by the way, are cordials supposed to settle your stomach or leave you from the table with a buzz?
I mean, I think in theory they're supposed to settle your stomach, but I mean, do they leave you with a buzz? No. They
don't. No, I mean, I will have Bailey's on the rocks at the end of the day.
That's delicious.
But now I'm for some reason all I taste is the sugar. I mean, do they need to be? And I thought this had this great history. It's Americans came up with Bailey's. They're trying to make it seem like it's from Ireland.
I feel like the MAHA movement has gotten too far in your brain that you just can't enjoy the Baileys after dinner. You're like, sugar.
I'm like, I have to have sugar at the end of the day.
Well, just do tequila. You'll be fine.
I know. They say tequila does not get you hungover, which I think is wrong.
I think that's a total lie.
Do you think the clear liquor doesn't give you a headache?
Oh, tequila does not like me.
And that's clear.
Yes, that's very clear.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
And just today we have seen a reckless and unprecedented violation of Poland and Europe's airspace by more than 10 Russian Shahed drones. Europe stands in full solidarity with Poland.
The full assessment is ongoing. And to Putin, I mean, my message is clear. Stop the war in Ukraine. Stop the escalating war, which he is now basically mounting on innocent civilians and civilian infrastructure. Stop violating Allied airspace and know that we stand ready. that we are vigilant and that we will defend every inch of NATO territory.
That is the General Secretary of NATO, the EU General Secretary, weighing in on the Shahed drones that landed in Poland. And there's no word that they weren't targeted for Poland, knocked out of the sky, aided by NATO air power, which I think was mostly Dutch. And the person who knows the details is Trey Yanks, Fox News chief foreign correspondent, and he has found himself in Kyiv, normally in Jerusalem. Hey, Trey, what has it been like over the last 5-6 days in Kyiv? It seems like the cadence is picking up from Russia.
Yeah, Brian, things are really escalating here. Over the weekend, the Russians launched more than 800 drones toward this country, along with 13 missiles. And one of those missiles slammed into a government building in the Ukrainian capital. Just last night, another 400 drones were launched by the Russians into Ukraine. But something else happened that was seen as a significant escalation in this conflict. Russia put 19 of those drones toward Polish airspace, ultimately forcing some of the country's largest airports to temporarily shut down and close their airspace. According to Polish officials, 4 of the drones were shot down. But what this did is that it triggered a NATO response. So you had Western European fighter jets scrambling to get to Polish airspace to defend their NATO ally. And this is the first time since the war began 3.5 years ago that we've seen such a massive escalation into a NATO country. And it raises real questions.
Yeah, might have lost it. So what he's going to do is hook up again. He's in Kyiv, and they're dealing with all types of communications issues. But this is the first time. I mean, look, they want to see how we're going to respond. That's what they do. You do tests. We see this all the time. And see how NATO would respond. Would they be coordinated? Would the communications be good? And they'll monitor it from what they see, from what they see from satellites and what they're able to pick up on transmissions and see how they would go about it. Now, to me, the last country they'd probably want to hit is Poland. They've basically shut down their borders with Belarus and Russia. They're building a huge wall. I know walls don't work. And they're building up. They're now spending over 4% of their GDP on defense. And you have to tell Poland, do you think, after World War I and World War II, what it's like to be invaded, dominated? Absolutely not. They fought too hard for their freedom. But they're going to go for the Baltic states next. I don't think there's any question about that. I'm going to wait for it. I want you to hear what Mike Lawler told me, because I think the ball is in the president's court now. He's tried everything, gave them an off-ramp. They put up blockades on the off-ramp. They don't want it. Listen.
I think the president obviously tried to broker an agreement back in August. Putin has failed to respond. And so I think the president needs to move expeditiously, certainly, you know, by the end of the month.
I hope so. Trey, do you get the sense, too, they're looking for the U.S. to start leading on this, that the time for talking is over?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, President Trump has talked about additional sanctions for the Russians with the help of the Europeans. There was a meeting earlier this month in Paris where a variety of European partners to Ukraine discussed not just the possibility of a post-war plan of having peacekeepers on the ground here, but also even something before to incentivize this Russian invasion that continues along the 13-mile front line in the eastern part of this country, but also these daily air attacks that are now affecting European countries that are members of NATO. And so the pressure is increasing on the Americans to get more directly involved and put new pressure on Vladimir Putin. And the Ukrainian officials that we talked to are pointing to this meeting in Alaska that took place last month between President Trump and Russian President Putin. Putin told the president he was open to a negotiated settlement, a ceasefire, a peace deal to try and end this conflict. But his words and actions have not matched. And that is what we see on the ground. Continued war, continued attacks, and no effort by the Russian leader to get to the negotiating table.
Yeah, there's no question. And I think that the president, it looks like that Vladimir Putin has been emboldened since his trip to China and since the meeting in Alaska. So it's not even making it difficult for the president to see potential on a talks with Putin. They'll probably talk this week, maybe today. But there's no way you could look at this and rationalize that they want anything to do with nothing but escalation. So it makes me think that air defense, NATO buying it, getting more weaponry, giving them permission to hit inside Russia. Yeah, I think you have to escalate to de-escalate. It seems to be the only answer, because every time they go to talk, it's viewed as weakness. I wish it was a different code of conduct, but it seems to be the law of the Eastern jungle.
Absolutely. And look, there are more options on the table for the Ukrainians. They have the weaponry already in the country from Western allies, but their hands are tied in some sense. They are being told not to target certain areas of Russia. They're allowed to go after energy infrastructure near to the border, but they have largely, not completely, but largely avoided targeting the Russian capital. They have also often avoided any sort of escalatory action when they had the operational opportunity. Now, that's not to say that the Ukrainians haven't launched counterattacks of their own. They have, and they continue to. But there are other options to escalate from their angle, and it has to have the green light of their allies, including the United States, understanding that this war is continuing at this level due to the support that Ukraine has, because they can't fight this war alone, and they are relying on that Western support.
So what's the attitude of the people like, Trey?
Interestingly, the attitude of the people is the same that we've seen from the beginning of this conflict. They want to liberate their country from Russian invaders. They understand that in February of 2022, their sovereignty was violated. We were here reporting on the ground then. We've spent hundreds of days reporting here since. And the mood among the people has been very similar. They don't see a need for this war to end unless Ukrainian sovereignty is held. And that's quite interesting because they're certainly tired. They spend almost every night in a bomb shelter, and they're under serious missile attack and drone attack. And so it's a population that has suffered for 3.5 years. Thousands have been displaced from communities in the east, and there is no one here that is totally untouched by this conflict. You see it in the streets. You see the amputees of soldiers who have returned from the front lines, and it will affect generations to come in Ukraine if they're not able to find a solution to end this conflict.
It's pretty clear, too, they're torturing the prisoners, where Ukraine is not.
Absolutely. The Russians are notorious for their treatment of prisoners of war. They've also executed some Ukrainian prisoners in the field and spread those videos around as propaganda. And so it's a challenging situation. The Ukrainians are not up against a good faith actor, and they will have to continue to fight this war for their survival, truly the country's survival, given the fact that the Russians are taking Ukrainian territory as we speak.
But they did seem to have taken a couple of towns back in Donetsk. Is that correct, the Ukrainians?
Yeah, that's correct. They've been able to launch a number of successful counteroffensives, but they've been small in comparison to the amount of territory that Russia took. They also were successful in the Kharkiv region around Ukraine's second largest city. But given the fact that they lose so many soldiers when this happens and so many resources in order to do that, these counteroffensives aren't so sustainable. And that is why the Ukrainians are looking for a broader solution.
Understood. Trey, I'm sure no one has to tell you what happened in Doha yesterday, killing of 5 Hamas higher-ups. Didn't get everybody they wanted, but got some. So now there's Qatar says our sovereignty has been breached. Not many people bringing up the 7 who died in a bus bomb in Jerusalem. And it looks as though the talks are going to have trouble getting back on track. Mild condemnation from the U.S. We didn't know about it ahead of time, but we appreciate the objective of wiping out Hamas. What's changed? I know you're not there right now, but you live there.
Yeah, I'm talking to a lot of sources, American sources, Qatari sources, Israeli sources. And the understanding on the ground is that there were ongoing negotiations. Now, these negotiations have been largely unsuccessful because Hamas is still holding 48 hostages inside Gaza, and this conflict continues. The understanding that we have is that the conversations were set to resume this week, and they were actually looking at a deal that was put forward by President Trump and his Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff. Our understanding now is that these negotiations are derailed. And so we are likely to hear more from President Trump about this, just given the fact that the proposal being discussed was his personal proposal, from what we understand from Israeli sources and also American sources. The question, though, comes back to the situation on the ground inside Gaza, because that war continues and it hasn't let up since October 7th of 2023, when Hamas launched this cross-border attack. The real question that I have as a journalist covering the region is, what does this mean for the ongoing conversations? Because, like it or not, for the entire world, the Qataris play a role as mediators, and they play often the primary role as mediators in this part of the world. And this conflict was no different. And so if they totally step back from the table following these strikes against their capital of Doha, going after Hamas leadership in a compound there, it raises questions about who will be in charge. And if the Egyptians, generally the secondary negotiators, are the ones leading the negotiation. They have a series of issues of their own that will have to be discussed with American officials and the National Security Council.
Yeah, like they sealed off their border, won't let one Palestinian in, so made it they're penned in right now because their border's shut off. And what did they allow happen for all those years with those sophisticated tunnels that came from their border? So it's a complex situation. I think Israel's just got to finish the job. Trey Yink, stay safe. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Fox News chief correspondent, always in the eye of the storm. Literally, when we come back, we got some minutes. 1-866-408-7669. Kamala Harris had an excerpt from her book let out. You're not going to believe what she had to say about the decision and what was behind the decision for Joe Biden to run and then not to run.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If anything, would you have done something differently than President Biden during the past 4 years?
There is not a thing that comes to mind.
That is a little of Kamala Harris as in the 107 days that she was running as president. And now she has got a book out and they've got some excerpts that have been released in the Atlantic magazine where she talks about what everyone wants to know. What went into that decision? What do you think about the president's decision to step aside and you step in? So she talks about this, like openly speculating, what was she supposed to do after that debate? She said, he was, by some measures, the most consistently underestimated man in Washington. He'd been right about his tactics for pushing his agenda through resisting Congress. Now, obviously, I don't agree with a word about that. He's underestimated for a reason. I like some of his foreign policy decisions, but he made a lot of stupid mistakes. He never spoke clearly and coherently. He lied consistently for 30 years. Johnny Carson was mocking him about the stories of everything big and small, about meeting someone with a Purple Heart in a battle and graduating with honors and getting a scholarship to Syracuse for law school. It turns out he's the bottom of his class in law school, never got any scholarship. Just little things like that. So I'll continue. What would come off as too self-serving if I advised him not to run? He would see it as naked ambition, perhaps a poisonous disloyalty, even if my only message was, don't let the other guy win. Quote, it's Joe and Jill's decision. We all said that like a mantra, as if we'd been all hypnotized. Was it grace or was it recklessness? In retrospect, I think it was recklessness. The stakes were simply too high. This wasn't a choice that we should have to been left to an individual's ego, an individual's ambition. It should have been more than a personal decision. Now, let's factor in something else. She doesn't bring up anything about his intellectual ability. He's not even there. Robert Hur wrote about it. She knows it. The debate didn't surprise her because she was so tired from traveling. When he had a week off to get ready for the debate and just slept the whole time. And now you have a guy that's truly demented making a decision to stay in the race. What are you talking about, Grace? You just go in and say, listen, have a big meeting with Jeff Zients. This guy can't function. I'm going to go public with the fact that he can't function. If you cared about the country. She went on to say, here is the truth as I live, that Joe Biden was a smart guy with long experience and deep conviction, able to discharge the duties of president on his worst day, and he says he's better than Trump in it. I don't think it's any surprise that the debate debacle happened right after the back-to-back trips to Europe and a flight to the West Coast for a Hollywood fundraiser. I don't believe it was incapacity. If I believed that, I would have said so. As loyal as I am to President Biden, I'm more loyal to my country. I doubt it, because if you just watched the tapes, you knew something was wrong. That should have been enough to trigger your loyalty to the country. She goes on, when Fox News attacked me on everything from my laugh to my tone of voice, who I dated in my 20s, or claimed I was a DEI hire, the White House rarely pushed back. With my actual resume, Lori Vols, my chief of staff, constantly had to advocate for my role at events. Quote, she's not going to just stand there like a potted plant. Give her 2 minutes of remarks. Have her introduce the president. They had a huge comms team. They had KJP in the press room every day. But getting anything positive about my work or any defense against the untrue attacks was almost impossible. As Kayleigh McEnany told me, that's never the job of the press secretary of the White House to bring up and build up the vice president. You have your own comms team. She also complained that as a woman, it's tough being the first female vice president. It's tough enough. What are you talking about? You're vice president. That's it. No one said, oh, I got to cover a female. And she had her own press coverage, her own press pool. That's the opportunity to pull people aside. I've said this even in retrospect. I remember saying, these are opportunities to tell me what you think. You have people on the street come up and say, what do you think about the rescue package? When people say it's going to up inflation, what do you think? You know, when people say that you're not going to the border and you're just going to the Central and South America doing these meet and greets, what do you think? Instead, she didn't welcome that. J.D. Vance can do it. I mean, Dick Cheney can certainly have done it. I don't think there's any doubt that Joe Biden would never stop talking as vice president. He got himself in trouble because he tried to be the president a few times. And then here is her pathetic, woe is me attitude. From March 2021, my assignment was to attack the root causes of the misery that was driving people from their homes in Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. Because I prosecuted cartels and human traffickers from the Northern Triangle, I was up to speed on the region and its problems and had ideas about the kinds of things they could do. They want to leave the grandmother. Nobody wants to leave their grandmother, their church, their friends, their language. And then when they would do it, it is usually for the one of the reasons they fear for their lives or they can't make a living. Or much of that region is rural and farmers are increasingly hit by climate change, such as floods and droughts. That's why people come. Well, why do they stop coming? They stop coming because you sealed the border and the word came in. If you cross the border, you lost your life savings and we're sending you back. She refused to acknowledge that. Climate change, mass migration, the border is fine. We're going to sell off pieces of the wall. She's all part of that. Never did anything. So if she thinks it's going to rehab it, forget it. What I'm going to watch and I'm going to pop some popcorn for, the word is that the Biden folks have such a negative feeling towards her ability to do anything and her ability to execute, flat out lazy and wouldn't read her briefings, that if she came out and attacked them or Biden at all, they're going to come at her with both barrels, of course, with press. So let's see. I mean, that wasn't too nice, saying that Joe Biden's ego kept him in the race. We shouldn't be subjected to somebody's ego. Wow. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget, One Nation, Sunday night, 10 p.m. It's a must watch. No idea what's on the show yet, but I know you must watch it. Don't leave.
And seeing what is possible unburdened by what has been.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show on a very important Wednesday. A lot going on locally, internationally, and it's important we get a perspective on it because some big decisions have to be made, once again, by the President of the United States, who thrives in these situations. But we know we've had two wars that just won't go away. 700-plus days of war and 700-plus days with war since Gaza, the October 7th attack, and even longer for Ukraine, the invasion. But there's some major decisions that got to be made. Earlier, we spoke to Trey Yingst about it. He's over in Kyiv, and we'll discuss that. By the way, the President of the United States is going to be on our couch on Friday on Fox and Friends. I hope you can see everyone will see you there. He's going to be in town Thursday, in town for in New York City for the Yankee game. He's going to throw out the first pitch. Man, after George Bush nailed that pitch, I'd never want to be next, the next president, especially now the president's 79. Big three.
Number three.
We can reduce that jail population. Some of this also just has to look at the average stay on Rikers in the 90s was 50 days. Now it's more than 100.
Well, and you know what? We were safer. New York mayor's race. Mamdani widens his lead with almost 50% of the vote. Why this race hasn't been converted to a one-on-one, I don't know. Cuomo and Adams have some polling. Even Sliwa, I'd like to see some polling how he would do one-on-one.
Number two.
Elon Musk, Charlie Kirk, other Trump-aligned figures succeeded in making this senseless death a symbol of big city crime. I have to say, some of the replies to Musk, some of the comments around this story are baldly racist, stoking fear of African-Americans because this man attacked a white woman.
I mean, didn't you think the ridiculous statements coming out of CNN were starting to level off of late? But no. Murdered in cold blood. Charlotte. Dems call it pure politics, as in Brian Stelter. What the Dems don't understand about crime in America and what I do.
Number one.
Israel has nothing to apologize for. Hamas has been giving every opportunity to lay down their weapons and leave and have sanctuary. They choose to fight. I don't blame Israel one bit.
Neither do I. Crisis in Doha. IDF kills Hamas terror chiefs in Qatar, causing additional international outrage, catching us by surprise. Will anyone bring up the seven killed waiting for a bus in Jerusalem hours before? Joining us now, a man who knows about the problems with the Middle East and trying to bring peace there, Carl Rove. Carl, welcome back. Your thoughts about the attack yesterday?
Well, first of all, welcome back to you. I thought they told me I was going to be on with Griff Jenkins, and I was really looking forward to it. I mean, for a second week in a row. But
wow. You, how did you get along with Griff? Because you two are very different people.
We get along well, just like I get along well with you. You're the outgoing, you know, charismatic, you know, world's biggest, best radio host, and I'm a mere Politico, you know, nerd. So we get along well, don't we?
It's a good match of skills. So what
exactly.
You've seen a lot of challenges. I remember during your time, Secretary of State, or I don't know if she was National Security Advisor, Condoleezza Rice thought, let's get elections in the Palestinian territories and start building some type of two-state solution. Hamas wins, and nothing's been right since.
Yeah. Well, and look, remember, we were dealing with a much different, you know, the Yasser Arafat. Bush refused to deal with him at all and refused to deal with his people. And there was a hopeful sense that we might be able to begin to transition Palestinian people into a more, you know, viable future, and it didn't work out. And it was because Abbas, the replacement, turned out to be a weak and ineffective leader who gave in to the more violent elements in the community. And Hamas, different than the Palestinian Authority, but nonetheless more powerful because of the support of Iran and other actors in the Middle East. Now, this attack complicated things. It complicated things because, first of all, the United States was not advised about it and consulted in advance. They were told moments before the strike took place. And second of all, it involved, you know, aircraft. So we're striking a building in the middle of a city of a close ally who hosts the largest military installation of the United States in the Middle East. And so there are going to be ramifications from this. This would have been different had the Israelis been able to take out the leadership of Hamas by some of the same tactics they deployed in Lebanon or that they deployed in Iran in years past. That is to say, you know, using non-conventional means, secret service, I mean, secret intelligence.
So killing them is okay, but how?
Yeah, but I think that's my view. I mean, look, in a way, the West wanted Hamas to be in Qatar so that rather than in Tehran, so that we could observe them and so we could monitor them. But and all the, you know, the last three or four presidents have been five presidents have been complicit in that because that was a decision that we as a country made. You got a choice. They can be in Tehran and you can't get any glimpse of what they're doing, or you can keep them in a place like Qatar and monitor them. But now we're in a place where an ally who is in a precarious position, on the one side, they don't have the greatest relationship in the world with Saudi Arabia. They got a terrible relationship with Iran, but they share a gigantic gas field that is in the waters between Iran and Qatar. And that's basically the wealth of the country is that gigantic, enormous gas field. And so they've made the decision to ally themselves with the United States and our influence in the region, as opposed to their nearby neighbor who could wipe them out in a moment. And now we are in a place where they're in a place where they have, you know, they hosted Hamas because the West told them to, and now they have, you know, had a building in their downtown struck by Israeli aircraft. So the ramifications of this are going to take some time
is true, Carl. I get it. But you have to understand, too, that the Israelis said anybody involved with Hamas, it was involved in October 7th.
That's right.
And if you have them in your house, you're susceptible. You know, if you're hosting al-Baghdadi, I'm sorry. That house is your mud hut's going down with you in it.
Right. Right.
So I just want you to hear a little of my exchange with the Qatari foreign minister spokesperson today. Cut 7.
Obviously, Prime Minister Netanyahu does not want peace, does not want the U.S. to create peace in the region, and wants to create more chaos in the region and beyond.
You really think the offer of Hamas being able to leave, the releasing the hostages, is not something the prime minister wants?
Yes. And this is why he attacked every time there was a peace that was going to come across the corner. We've seen this happen at every interval of these talks. Wherever we get close to a deal, there is sabotage by Prime Minister Netanyahu.
So let's do a little quiz. What happened hours before? You just blew it. Hamas blew up a bus station, killing 7 innocent people looking to get to work. So who doesn't want peace? The guy who kills in the afternoon or one that kills in the evening?
Well, if you're asking me, this is you're getting to the heart of it. I mean, look, Hamas is a terrorist organization, and they have it'd be one thing if we had seen in the last several months them conciliating themselves to the fact that they have lost authority in Gaza, that they're on the ropes, and that the best deal for them is to come to the conclusion of hostilities and hope to survive. But they have been a roadblock every step of the way. And the Hamas leadership has lied to the world. Let's go back to the original sin. They conducted a raid, a massacre of innocent civilians.
Thank you.
This was not this was not a war between two armies. This was a war by an army on the people of Israel, the largest number of Jews having been killed since the Holocaust. And they, you know, they somehow expect that they're going to be able to have moral equivalency with what the Israelis are doing. And that ain't the case. They conducted an open war on civilians and raped and pillaged and massacred and showed their acts on YouTube videos. And, they're getting what they deserve. Let's not skip over the fact, though, that this latest incident is going to have ramifications. We don't know exactly how it's going to play out. But no, the Qatar foreign minister, you know, made a mistake by suggesting moral equivalence between what Israel is attempting to do, which is to get at the terrorists of Hamas, and what Hamas is attempting to do, which is to kill Jews.
So let's talk about crime in America. And we know D.C. has gotten markedly better by everyone. You could say what you want about National Guard or cost, whatever. But if you want to keep people safe, that's worked. And the president wants to do it in other cities, and he might just do it. But the one people that they're pushing back, all Democrats, they want to make sure that he's not going to fix anything like, for example, in Chicago with Pritzker coming out and saying we want to make sure we guard against the president coming in here while he's losing, you know, there's 70 shootings a weekend and 16 are dead. But meanwhile, you have a real gem in your state, Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett. She weighed in on a podcast about crime. Listen to this nugget. Cut 15.
I want to be clear that, like, law enforcement isn't to prevent crime. Law enforcement solves crime, okay? That is what they are supposed to do. They are supposed to solve crimes, not necessarily prevent them from happening.
I don't know what
per
se. Yeah, I don't know what law school she graduated from, but they can't be proud today.
No, they can't. And look, she was a joke when she was in the Texas House of Representatives. She's a joke in the U.S. Congress. That, you know, the fact that she's got a big mouth and a willingness to say incredibly stupid things. Of course, the law enforcement, by its very presence in our communities, is to deter crime. That's why we have, you know, we have police visible and on the streets, is to discourage people from committing acts of violence or crime, because they know that they're going to be caught and they're going to be sentenced and sent away to prison. So, you know, look, why we pay attention to her, I know why we pay attention to. Because she likes to have the attention paid. She says incredibly stupid stuff, and the Democrats get tarred with all of the stupid stuff she gets to say, and because they don't stand up to her, they put her out there as a spokesman. Did you see she got appointed to an important new committee by the House Democrats? And she's a nut. She is a performance artist. She's not a serious person, and they're going to pay the price for letting her go out and say things like law enforcement has no responsibility for preventing crime. It's to solve crimes. No. Law enforcement is there to make our community safe by their presence so that lawbreakers mm-hmm. understand that if they commit an act, they will be caught, they will be tried, they will be held accountable, and they will suffer.
So this other story that popped up in Charlotte and got everyone's attention over the weekend, Republicans are being accused by Democrats in almost every mainstream media outlet of trumping up this crime in order to sell crime out of control in cities. Her name is Irina Zarutska. She is 23 years old, working two jobs from Ukraine, trying to get a new life in America, trying to leave that war-torn country, and was loving it. And she went on a train, looked at her phone, and got sliced across the neck. You see it on camera. This is real. It's horrific. And here's the President of the United States in response to it. Cut 16.
She was slaughtered by a deranged monster who was roaming free after 14 prior arrests. We cannot allow a depraved criminal element of violent repeat offenders to continue spreading destruction and death throughout our country. We have to respond with force and strength. We have to be vicious just like they are. It's the only thing they understand.
Axios stabbing video fuels MAGA's crime message. Charlotte leaders criticized over killing of Ukrainian woman as Trump MAGA target another Democratic city. Times, a gruesome murder in North Carolina ignites a firestorm on the right. Why are we categorizing crime? It should be everyone. Cities are full of Democrats. Then there's politicians. You know, Washington's full of Republicans, too. So why is this a political thing?
Well, because, look, this goes back to a decision that we as a country made mistaken, in my opinion, you know, some 50, 60 years ago. And that is to, in essence, you know, stop institutionalizing mentally ill people. And this guy, you know, was mentally ill. He committed a series of increasingly violent crimes and ultimately took the life of this poor woman in a highly public way. And it's because this is a failure of our system. Maybe we ought to reexamine this question and say, are there people in our society who are suffering from mental illness and are going to become and have demonstrated that they are career chronic criminals that we ought to be able to institutionalize to keep them from hurting other people? And, you know, this guy came in and out of the system so many times, clearly diagnosed as violent, clearly diagnosed as mentally deranged, and got slaps on the wrist and tossed back into a society that it was incapable for him to function in as a normal adult. So maybe we ought to reexamine this question so that we can begin to think about the terrible question of saying, are there people in our society who are so sick and are incapable of living anything like a normal life that we have to institutionalize mm-hmm. them in order to keep them from hurting themselves and, more importantly, from hurting others.
Right. But I just think that the judge, there might be a pathway to get psychological treatment. But the first thing a judge should do is make sure that he is not allowed to kill, to hurt, to maim,
right.
to rob.
Right.
And that judge
right.
didn't care. His mother
no.
said he was dangerous. His brother said he was dangerous. And now a 23-year-old is dead because of it. And
yes.
I don't think I said anything that's Republican or Democrat. And I think Republicans get that. I think the common sense Americans get that. Carl, thanks so much.
Yeah. Great to have you back.
All right. Thanks. Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You know, foreign policy is not as black and white as we always want it to be. We have one very close strategic friend and ally that just slapped another strategic friend and ally. That's a problem with us in the middle, in part. But any dead Hamas is good. We want to see dead Hamas across the board, even if it's the ones that are hiding behind the negotiating table, which is what they've been doing in a safe house in Qatar. That's the problem on the Qatar front.
And they got billions of dollars from Qatar to put him up there. Now, I know that they wanted him in place. I know for a fact that Israel said, I need somebody to negotiate with. That was prior to October 7th. But to see these guys make millions, live a life of luxury, continue to support with money that they're earning, raising, and sending into Gaza to kill IDF, four of which soldiers died on Wednesday, on Tuesday, and then you have seven pedestrians trying to go to work or school or just transportation get blown up at a train station. That's pretty serious. That's why I'm more with Lindsey Graham than Brian Mast. Cut eight.
What do these people have in common who died in Qatar? They all had their fingerprints on planning October the 7th or cheerleading October the 7th. When we killed bin Laden in Pakistan, we didn't call Pakistan. We had nothing to apologize for. Israel has nothing to apologize for. Hamas has been giving every opportunity to lay down their weapons and leave and have sanctuary. They choose to fight. They choose to destroy their own people. I don't blame Israel one bit.
I don't either. Coming up next, Sid Rosenberg just talked to President Trump on his great show on 77 WABC right here in New York, with the president's coming on Thursday, and we'll stay through Friday and join us on the couch on Fox and Friends. Sid Rosenberg, the big time personality here in New York, is coming up shortly, a good friend of the show. Don't move.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a three-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. Sid Rosenberg, who dominates in the New York market, every market he's in. Every mayoral candidate is wooing him, hoping to get Sid on their side, whether it's Cuomo, whether it's Eric Adams, whether it is Curtis Sliwa. No calls from Mamdani yet, unless, of course, something happened in between when his show ended in New York and my show started. Sid Rosenberg, welcome back.
It's great to be with you, Brian. I'm always honored to be on your show. What a great show. Great show.
Oh, thanks so much. And first off, Mamdani, has he called you yet?
You know, he hasn't. He mentioned me once, which I was honored. They did a story on him in some crazy magazine I've never heard of here in New York City. It's called The Vulture. It's really an online magazine, Brian. And they asked Mamdani the 25 things he liked the most and disliked the most. And one of the questions was, what's been the worst thing in your campaign? And his answer was, and you know this because you were filling in that night on Fox News for Laura Ingraham, his answer was Sid Rosenberg calling me an animal on Fox News. So he hasn't called me, but I'm very proud of that one appearance with you that night on Fox News.
All right, I want you to hear, this guy now has a 46-23 percentage lead over Cuomo. Eric Adams is third, still in single digits. Curtis Sliwa was third at 15, and then Eric Adams is fourth with 9% of the vote. What's going to change leading up to November? Is it a fait accompli?
You know, it's interesting. I had the president on my show yesterday, my radio show, President Trump, and I know he's going to be on with you guys on television on Fox News on Friday morning on the curvy couch. He loves you, Brian. But it almost seemed to me like he was resigned to the fact that it's over. You know, there was a time there where people were hoping that a couple of guys would drop out. Now, you know, Brian, I've been very consistent through these last couple of months. I said no one is dropping out. I fought with billionaires and millionaires and analysts. I said, I just don't see it. And guess what? I've been right. Now, the closest was Eric Adams, if he takes a job with the Trump administration. But the truth is, based upon Eric Adams' polling, the incumbent is irrelevant to the race. As long as you've got Sliwa, Cuomo, and Mamdani in this race, Mamdani's probably going to win and maybe win easily. So the truth is I'm fighting for Curtis. I want Curtis. But right now, it'd be crazy not to think that Mamdani's not going to be the next mayor here in New York.
Which is, by the way, the more interviews he does when people ask different things, questions, he has no idea. He hasn't even thought about these policies. He's got his ridiculous supermarket plot and plan, the freezing of the rents. If it's one-on-one, Cuomo loses by 3 or 4. I could see Adams dropping out if Trump offers him a non-confirmed job, not a Senate confirmation job. I could see Adams dropping out. I don't see Curtis dropping out. But you talk to President Trump about the situation in New York in lieu of the fact that these 270-year-olds just got tied up and burned to death by this criminal still on the loose. The president was asked by you about crime in New York City.
Let's go to your city, New York's favorite son, President Trump. I got to tell you, watching you in the box on Sunday at the U.S. Open, it almost made me cry. I was so happy knowing you'll be here on Thursday for 9/11, the greatest president ever. And at the Yankee game with Randy Levine on Thursday night, I love all that. OK, I love it. But this city, they're fighting back, too. You know, I like Jessica Tisch. I like her, President Trump. She's a commissioner, but she's like, no, no. We don't want the National Guard. We don't want the government. Same thing with Hochul. Same thing with Adams. What are your thoughts on the possibility, if not probability, of bringing them to New York?
Well, I don't necessarily get it. I know them all, and, you know, to my face, they're nice. Really, to outside of my face, I guess they're not quite as nice. But she treats me very much nicer to my face than she does to the public. Yeah. But, look, I don't get it. You would think they'd want to see a city with almost no crime. You know, well, we can show cities where we do it, is where you literally have no crime. They say down 87%, but I said, really, who are the 13%? There is no crime. And when you can do that, you'd think they'd really want that. You'd think that would supersede politics. And it will. I believe it will. You know what's going to happen, Sid? It's going to get worse for these places, and they'll be asking for help. They're going to be asking for help because I don't believe a politician can survive with Democrats or Republicans if they're going to have hundreds of people killed a year.
And remember, she put Kathy Hochul put National Guard in the subways. Where was the outrage then? Well, they're out of place. Well, they just said, we need a presence for that. What was your takeaway from that exchange?
I took away that President Trump is not going to be bullied. Brian, whether it's Kathy Hochul, she's horrible. Here in New York, whether it's Wesley Moore in Maryland, whether it's that idiot Pritzker in Illinois, he's not going to be bullied. He's going to do what he thinks is right. I think he knows that crime is a major issue in New York. I know the mayor goes out of his way to talk about numbers being down, but you walk the streets every day, Brian. You and I work only about 8 blocks apart. It's not safe. The streets aren't safe. The subways aren't safe. That's not to say the NYPD isn't doing a great job. They are. They're only 31,000 in force. Or Jessica Tisch. She's terrific. But at the end of the day, too much crime, too many bad people, not enough cops. And eventually, Trump will go wherever he has to go. You know what he said to me? He said, listen, Sid. I said to him, President Trump, I can't imagine the day when you're not running anymore. I love Marco Rubio. I like J.D. Vance. But no more Trump. He said, what am I going to do in 3.5 years? You know what he said to me? He said, don't worry, Sid. I'll fix everything before I leave. When I leave in 3.5 years, I promise you, I'm going to fix everything. What was he talking about? Everything from Ukraine, Russia, to Hamas, Israel, to New York City, to Chicago. He said, Sid, I promise you, I'm going to fix everything.
Okay, that's a huge checklist, but he's off to a heck of a start 8 months in. So in terms of Lee Stefanik, you got a great pulse on what kind of shot she has of being governor. She's got a much better shot every day that Kathy Hochul talks. Here she is at a black church talking about a refund check that she's getting New Yorkers. Cut 42.
Checks are coming out soon. Watch the mail. Okay? Don't spend it all one day. Get something you really need. Okay? Don't stop by the liquor store. Okay? Buy something for the kids. Buy them some food. Sometimes I have to stop by the liquor store, too. I understand. It's all right. It's all right.
So, Lee Stefanik, just this is ridiculous. The same woman that's went up to black kids at a black school in grammar school or high school. Do you know what a computer is? So, I mean, what is your take on this? Does she really think that she's resonating?
No, I think she is. You know, it's funny because I was talking to Mike Lawler a couple of days ago. the great congressman from Rockland County here, Brian, and he was critical of Elise. You know, he has decided not to run for governor. Why? Because President Trump told him not to. He said, I need you in Congress. I got your salt. Do me a favor. Bow out. And he did. You know, I'm not sure about Bruce Blakeman yet, but Elise has a pretty easy pathway to that Republican nomination once she does it. But Waller was critical of that. Why wait? You know, she is waiting to see if Mamdani wins. I'm with Waller. Elise Stefanik, if you're listening, I love her. She's on my show all the time. We do events together. Don't wait. Jump in. Take all this time right now. She's killing Hochul anyway, Brian, on Fox News, on Twitter, my show, every opportunity. Make it count. So Elise Stefanik can win. We need her to win. Mm. And if I'm Elise Stefanik, I don't wait until November. I jump in now.
So Bibi Netanyahu getting some anger across the world because he went and took out those Hamas leaders in Doha. Are you against it or for it?
I'm all for it. I got to tell you, one of the best interviews I've ever seen, Brian, was with Brett Baer last night. Happens to be a friend of mine. He'll be on my show on Friday. That's Ambassador Leiter. And Baer was going back and forth. Well, you know, Trump is upset and Caroline Leavitt is upset and the Saudis are upset. And he kept going back to the same place, Leiter. He's the ambassador, of course. He said, listen, no disrespect to those other people, but it doesn't matter. Bibi promised after October 7th we were going to kill every member of Hamas. Now, listen, if Hamas wants us to stop, give back the 50 hostages, put down your guns, and that's it. But if they continue to hold these people hostage and kill people like they did in Jerusalem 2 days ago, 6 innocent people on a bus, we're going to find you, and we're going to kill you.
Right.
No disrespect to Qatar or President Trump or all the deals you've got in the Middle East. It doesn't matter. BB, this is BB's war. Now, Trump has helped tremendously. I love President Trump for that. This is BB's war.
Right.
So if you're a Hamas guy hiding out somewhere, anywhere in the world, I got bad news for you. It doesn't matter what any other country, any other leader says. We're going to find you, and we're going to kill you. That's the bottom line.
I get it. And it's worked with Hezbollah. It's worked with Houthis. It's worked with Syrians. It's worked with the Iranians. And just finish off Hamas and be done with it. We'll get the Abraham Accords going again. Sid Rosenberg, thanks so much for bringing us to Rosenberg University. We know how to think now because we listen to you. Sid, best of luck every single day on WABC.
Look who's talking. I got to tell you, I think you're the greatest. I really do, Brian. You do a phenomenal radio show, Fox and Friends. And everybody listen to me. You got to watch One Nation, 10 p.m. Sunday nights on Fox News. That's the best show on that channel. Brian Kilmeade, you're great. God bless you.
All right. Thanks so much, Sid. I was going to let you finish that plug, no matter what you were going to say. I'm just going to make sure you finish that. I appreciate it. Back in a moment with my interview with the spokesperson for the foreign minister of Qatar. Don't move.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
All right, we are back. You know, earlier today when I opened up on Fox and Friends, word came out that, you know, I have good relations with some of the royal family over in Qatar, met 3 or 4 of them at the UN last year, enjoyed getting their perspective on what's going on with the president's visits and what's going on since the October 7th attacks, the World Cup, and everything. Great reputation working with Fox Sports. But I cannot say that their outrage didn't bother me yesterday after the attacks. I could understand they were caught by surprise. But when you house Hamas, what are you expecting? And they say, we want to have more October 7th. They promised to hit Israel again. And you're housing them. They're sitting on another peace proposal. And everything's on hold. So the Qatar reached out and they said, we'd like to give our perspective on the attacks that were perpetrated in Doha. So here is my interview with the spokesperson for the foreign minister of Qatar on Fox and Friends. Let's listen.
Let's bring in Qatar's foreign minister spokesperson, Majid Al Ansari. Thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it, doctor. What happens today with the talks that were scheduled for yesterday afternoon?
Thank you, Brian. I'm very happy to be with you again. Let me tell you very clearly, President Trump had a plan on the table. He wanted us to convey that plan to Hamas, and this is exactly the meeting that Prime Minister Netanyahu decided in this rogue state behavior to attack in a sovereign state like Qatar. The attack came at a time when the Hamas members were discussing Trump's proposal, and it sends a very clear message to the partners of the U.S., the allies of the U.S., and to those who are negotiating with other parties that they are not safe, even when they are discussing the plans for peace.
Doctor, did you condemn the attacks on the bus station that killed seven innocent people who had the audacity to wait for mass transportation?
I think, Brian, when our country's sovereignty was attacked by a state actor like Israel, our main concern right now is with our own national security, our own sovereignty, and the blatant attack on our sovereignty taken by a state that is a member of the European Union, of the international community.
But that group has had 2 years to negotiate after an attack on October 7th that you never condemned, to get their hostages out, innocent people
we
starving to death.
October. Your information is incorrect.
Okay,
Ryan.
October. Okay,
please,
so you have 20
we
people
did
alive
the
under.
7th of October attacks. October. We did condemn these attacks and the blatant misinformation campaign by Prime Minister Netanyahu to try to put Qatar in the middle of this will not work. Well, on the 7th of October, the leaders of Hamas were not in Doha. They were brought to Doha for the negotiations that were held between Hamas
Doha.
And Israel
they
and with
live
the
in
support
Doha.
Of the United States.
But they live there.
Brian,
in luxury.
Let me make it very clear again. On the 7th of October, the images of the Hamas leaders, that was not in Doha. It was somewhere else. They were brought to Doha to discuss the hostage
release. I didn't bring up the
talks,
images.
But the misinformation by Prime Minister
but
Netanyahu
I didn't bring up the images.
To, in order to justify this attack will not fly with the Qatari government. I'm very sorry.
True or false, before this meeting, they were supposed to live, the deal was essentially give up all the hostages for a ceasefire. And they said if this adds up, this offer is essentially, of course, they get Palestinian prisoners back. They said this offer adds up to capitulation. That was the premise leading up to this. And if you think that the relation between the bombing at the bus station hours before, which was had to be green-lighted or at least okayed, certainly not condemned by those people taking part in the negotiations. How do you expect Israel to take that?
How do you expect Qatar to take an attack on its sovereignty at a time when the meetings were in place under the supervision of the United States and Trump administration with Envoy Witkoff engaged fully with our prime minister to make sure that the ideas that were presented by President Trump were put on the table? At that time, the meeting itself, according to the Israelis, was the target of the attack. How does that make us feel about the partnership with the United States over dealing with this issue? President Trump made it very clear. He wants this war over. He wants peace. And he is working very closely with us on it. But obviously, Prime Minister Netanyahu does not want peace, does not want the U.S. to create peace in the region, and wants to create more chaos in the region and beyond.
You really think the offer of Hamas being able to leave, the releasing the hostages, is not something the prime minister wants?
Yes. And this is why he attacked every time there was a peace that was going to come across the corner. We've seen this happen at every interval of this of these talks. Wherever we get close to a deal, there is sabotage by Prime Minister Netanyahu to make sure that we are back to square one.
Right. That it doesn't sound like you're a mediator there. It sounds like you're taking Hamas's side. Doctor, thanks so much for your time.
Well, when one of the parties decides to attack our sovereignty in a residential neighborhood where my countrymen, the residents of Qatar, live in schools and nurseries right next door, believe me, it's very difficult to maintain a very calm voice speaking to you.
One side drops flyers in order to save civilians. The other targets civilians. And we saw that October 7th. Thank you very much.
Well, I can assure you, no flyers were dropped on Doha at the time
the target,
when they were attacking
Hamas
a residential neighborhood.
Hamas
for sure.
Is the target, not Qatar. Thanks so much.
I know you have to always keep saying that, but this is the sovereignty
it's
of our country, and it's a residential neighborhood in Qatar. It is not Gaza. This
Got
is
it.
Our country, and this is an attack on our sovereignty.
The target was Hamas, not Qatar. Thanks so much.
And that's the whole thing. You have terrorists in your country and you get attacked. You go, you're attacking Qatar. No, they're attacking the terrorists in your country. No one's any problem with your government. So to me, that's pretty obvious. Plus, I was being wrapped the whole time. So I went about 2 minutes over. That didn't go over well with our control room. But I wanted to share that with you because they're outraged that they were hitting their country and they were caught by surprise. But it's like the 1972 after the Olympic massacre. Little by little, they got every one of those terrorists in all different countries. They were assassinated. They were killed. Cars were blown up. That's it. Israelis don't forget, and I don't blame them. They don't look to attack anyone, but their survival's at stake. That's what's in the balance. It's not a preference. It's if we don't kill you, you're going to kill us. But you're not going to go after our army. You're going to go after women and children. And you're going to take the millions of dollars in aid, and you're not going to build great cities. You're going to build great tunnels. That's the issue. There's good and bad in this. And the good is Israel. It's because they're not playing it like you're playing it. That's because you're not in that neighborhood. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.